All right. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the Boca Podcast. I am your host, Nathan Holritz. It is good to be here with you. For those of you that may be live streaming or watching the live stream today, it is a Friday, December 1st, actually. And this episode will be published on all the audio platforms by tomorrow, December 2nd. So you can look for those details. Of course, we'll be talking about what's going into the show notes during our live stream today. It is a little bit on the dark side today, so I'm not actually recording from a cave. It's super nasty outside, and we don't have a ton of ambient light. I've got my ring light right here, so that's why, if anybody is curious, why it's looking so dark. But I think we'll make do fine. And, of course, this show is brought to you by Photographer's Edit, custom editing or custom post-production for the wedding and portrait photographer. And you can check us out at photographersedit.com. All right. Well, without further ado, I want to introduce a brand new guest on the show today. Alex is here with me. Alex, you said that you would share your last name during the live stream, so I'm just going to ask you to pronounce it for us. What is that?
Right. The surname is Jodorhoff. The spelling doesn't help. I mean, the pronunciation doesn't help, but that's what you get. So,
but yeah. You know, it's so funny, even with relatively simple names, like my last name is Holritz, H-O-L-R-I-T-Z. Phonetically, it's very simple, but people will still mess it up, even the simpler names. So I guess easiest just to stick with the first names, right? Alex and Nathan.
Yeah, I think that's the best thing that you can do right now.
Well, fair enough. And just very briefly, for anybody who doesn't know Alex or isn't following Alex currently, I'm just going to pop this up on screen really quick. But if you go to Chroma, C-H-R-R-O-M-A, Odyssey, O-D-Y-S-S-E-Y.com, you can check out Alex's work there. And Alex, I got to give you major props. First of all, we haven't had a lot of videographers on the show. And in preparation for our conversation today, looking through your content, I mean, it's really, really good stuff. I'm super impressed by it. And for those listening in, you're going to want to make sure you go check it out. You can also follow Alex on Instagram. And of course, we'll link to this in the show notes at bocapodcast.com by tomorrow, December 2nd, for anybody who wants to get the direct links there. But it's Chroma, C-H-R-O-M-A, underscore Odyssey, underscore films on Instagram. And it looks like, Alex, on my personal account, I wasn't following you yet. Oh, this is one of our other business accounts. I'll make sure to follow you there. You're going to have lots of different followers from us. All right.
I just got it.
Perfect.
I just got a notification.
I think we're following you from three different accounts now, so that's great. Well, I just wanted to do that brief intro, so give a little bit of context. And as I alluded to, Alex is a videographer. We're here today to talk about how to create powerful reels to promote our photography businesses. And we're going to get to that topic in just a second. But Alex, just briefly, before we do that, I like to ask our guests as kind of the first question, something that's very much related to the premise of this podcast, which is helping photographers build sustainable businesses. It's very easy to get sucked in to the day-to-day busy work of running a business. And I'm curious if there's an idea, principle that has enabled you to maintain some level of freedom and flexibility as a business owner.
As you said, I do believe it's kind of tricky to get a very good like time management in general. One of the key parts that I do is I try to not action everything straight away, because I can have a number of ideas or a lot of things that can go through my mind quite quickly. I tend to just note everything down so that I can recall it later on, because usually I used to be very like, I would think of something, I would come up with an idea, whether it's content, whether it's about a client or fitness or anything it was at the moment. And I was like, right, I need to do it. So I would do it straight away.
Yeah.
If I knew that if I didn't do it, I would probably forget it. More like 95% I would forget it. I just keep a diary, or use your phone. I think the simplest one is your phone. I use notes, and it doesn't matter what it is. I will just, note it down and have it for future reference. I'm pretty sure that when I see it again, it will be what I was thinking. All the ideas will come back to me at that point. So that's the main thing. And sleep.
We kind of need sleep, don't we?
I've been on a podcast of a friend before, and at that time, you could really, really tell that I didn't sleep well. Like, I had big black bags under my eyes and all that stuff. And it wasn't like, it's not a healthy thing. And I think what most of either photographers or videographers tend to neglect is sleep, because we freelance a lot. We have to manage everything. We're not just photographers. We're social media managers. We're editors. We're color graders. We're business owners. That's the main part. And we forget to actually take care of ourselves. And I think that's actually very important. And that podcast was actually a wake-up call for me when I saw myself. Because, like, when I saw myself on the video, and I'm like, shit, I need sleep. And after that, I just tried to like take care of myself a bit more. If I won't pressure things too much, if I feel like, right, I'm done for the day, I'm done for the day, and just make sure to get my sleep in. And yeah, that's about it.
Yeah. And let's just kind of follow that train of conversation for a second. And of course, to be clear for everybody listening in or watching, we're not doctors. We're not trying to be doctors here. But any tips or tricks, Alex, that you have learned that's helped improve the quality of the sleep that you're getting? Or is it more just about making sure you're getting a certain number of hours in?
For me, it's hours. I don't like when it's too warm. I like when it's a bit chilly. And maybe not eat right before bed, although that probably would put you in a food coma anyway. So many people tend to avoid caffeine. I am Greek, so I don't avoid caffeine. I think my caffeine intake is way, way higher than a normal person. But it is what it is. Caffeine doesn't really affect me. The threshold is quite high, so that's good. I sleep like a baby even if I have a double espresso. For me, it's more like going at a specific time to bed and waking up at a specific time. When that happens, even like for a bit, it really like impacts like how my brain functions.
Yes.
And it's different for every person. Some people work with like 7 hours of sleep. Some people can function good with 8, but if they go over 8, they don't function as well. I personally, for me, like the golden ratio is like 9 hours. If I get 9 hours of sleep, I am literally hyperactive throughout the day and like fly throughout the day as it goes. So it's different for everyone, but just get your sleep.
Oh, 100%. And yeah, I'm very tempted to kind of follow this rabbit trail a little bit, because this is something that I've spent a lot of time kind of researching and studying and trying to refine for myself as well. But you're absolutely right. We'll leave it at this. The importance of keeping a consistent schedule. There's quite a bit of scientific research to back up the significance of that, and basically playing to what's called a circadian rhythm. And it really does make quite a big difference to have a consistent schedule. And I will say, I mean, you talk about the importance of being, and for yourself anyway, being in a cool environment. Again, there's quite a bit of research that seems to back that up as well. But there is something to be said for, I mean, even now, as the temperature here in the Chattanooga area is dropping to the 30s or thereabouts, especially at night and early morning, I sleep so much better. It's so good. So I'm very tempted to get one of those mattresses, the cooling mattresses. Like, I think it's called the 8 Sleep mattress that actually cools the mattress, and you can set the temperature, just because I've seen such a big impact, even in the last week or two, in the quality of my sleep as a result of that lower temperature. It really does make a big difference.
I think I've seen, I don't remember if it was a paper. Apparently, like, your body has a certain temperature, but it's the temperature of your head that actually puts you into sleep. So I think, I don't know in Fahrenheit, but in Celsius, it's 2 degrees Celsius. When it drops 2 degrees Celsius below your body temperature, you start going into basically sleep mode.
Interesting. So, that's really cool.
I think it's a good thing to look it up. I read it like a couple of months ago, and it was like very interesting, because, like, you know, I like to keep cool, so it kind of makes sense as well.
Yeah, it definitely makes a big difference. Well, we won't park there too long, but that's some good food for thought for our listeners. And as you said, especially photography or videography business owners, it's very easy to get caught up in the work and work late hours. And the last thing that we need is for the quality of our work to be affected by sleep. And it's a bit ironic that we end up staying up late hours and then not getting a good sleep, which then in turn affects our creativity. We all need the sleep. That's a good reminder for all of us. But let's keep going in the conversation. I actually want to get to our primary topic for today. So we're going to be talking about what I realize is a really loaded topic, Alex, to cover within less than an hour. But we're going to try to do our best here and especially lean on your expertise. We're going to talk about an approach to creating powerful, impactful video reels for the sake of promoting our photography businesses. And certainly there's going to be a million different ways to go about this process. So I'm curious to get your take. But let's start first with the gear that you tend to use for the reels, for example, that are on your Instagram page. Again, some really impressive work, beautifully done. But what's your go-to set of gear, camera, lens, lighting?
I will admit that I wouldn't say I'm not a fan of artificial lighting. I am a fan of artificial lighting, like tube lights and stuff like that. I've worked with flash when it comes to product and stuff like that, because I come from a photography background. I used to be a product and lifestyle photographer for almost 6 years. And then I fell basically in love with color grading. That's what had me like take the leap into video. But when it comes to the gear I use for reels, whether for my clients or whether for me, I've went quite minimal with the gear. In terms of like, I genuinely now own one body and one lens. I do not own an array of lenses like many people do, like I used to in the past. But I literally run on an FX3 and a Sigma 24-70, and that is it. I don't own a 70-200.
The FX3 is the Fuji, is that right?
No, the Sony FX3.
Sony FX3, okay.
Yeah. So it's a cinema line camera. I love it. As in, like, it's got... The reason I mainly got it is not just because, like, it shoots 4K at 120. And obviously you can get beautiful slow motion out of it. But the main reason that I got it is because it's got a dual gain ISO, and the second base of its ISO is at 12,800. So the image at that ISO does not have any noise.
Wow.
So I can shoot at F4 if I want to put a bit more detail in. I can shoot at F2.8 at pitch black. It doesn't matter. It's a very impressive sensor.
And then what's the Sigma lens that you're using? What's the focal length?
It's 24-70.
Nice.
And it's a f2.8. Probably one of the sharpest 24-70s that I've used. I've used the Sony G Master Mark 1. I've used the Mark 2. I've also been through all the Canon, basically, the EF mount. 24-70, because I used to shoot Canon. I used to own a 60. But this is by far the most sharp lens I've basically owned or have used.
And I love that we can get that kind of quality from the so-called third-party lenses, right? Like, I shot Nikon for all of my wedding career, and I think it may have been the exact same focal length. It would have been a different lens because this was many years ago, but a 24-70 2.8 Sigma that was just, it was wonderful. And, you know, a lot of, at least at the time anyway, photographers who were kind of equipment nerds, if you will, they might come back and say, oh no, you got to get the Nikon glass. It's so much better. But number one, the people that are saying that are probably zooming into like 400% and analyzing the pixels. The end client who's getting that finished product from us isn't going to know the difference. And I was actually quite impressed with the finished product from the Sigma glass. And again, this was probably like 15 years ago. So I love that we have those options. I also love that focal length because it does give you a lot of flexibility, and it means I don't have to bring five different lenses to do the job. That 24-70 gives me a lot to work with.
Well, I personally find it very handy because, I shoot athletes, so all my content is fitness related, and it's like very like quick paced, and I don't have any complaints. It works with the Sony autofocus system very impressively, considering it's a third party lens. it's absolutely amazing. And if anything, it's a bit too clinical, too sharp. So, like, for example, now I have, oh, it's that way, I have a bit of a pro mist, you can see over there in the back, just to soften it up a bit, because it's really sharp and really clinical. So yeah, I really like it. It's my favorite lens. I am waiting for their 70-200 to come out, because I'll probably get it for events that are like in big spaces, so like in a stadium or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But so far it hasn't disappointed me at all.
That's great. And I think you're a good example for our listeners as well, because as you alluded to earlier, a lot of photographers tend to spend quite a bit of money. Sometimes in situations where they don't have that money to be spending, they'll spend a lot of money on a bunch of gear. It has lots of different options. It feels good. It's cool to buy the gear. But at the end of the day, the return on investment, I think, or there's a kind of a diminishing return on investment having 5, 6, 7 different lenses that we're pulling from, when we could use one or two lenses, get the job done, not be distracted by having to switch lenses out. I think simplicity has a lot of value in that context. So I'll leave the conversation at that, but I appreciate you sharing the gear. Speaking of gear though, as much now as, you know, pretty much any modern DSLR or mirrorless camera has good video functionality built into it, not necessarily every photographer listening in or watching may know how to use their camera for the sake of video. And so a phone is an easy go-to. I've got an iPhone 15 Pro here that is absolutely stunning, both with photography and videography. And
15 Pro Max.
You've got the Max. There, yeah. I actually saw a piece of content that you shot with just recently on that, and it looked beautiful. So we've got these incredible tools in our hands and in our pockets pretty much at all times. And so I'm curious if you might have some recommendations for those photographers who are like, you know what, I don't want to set up my DSLR, my mirrorless camera and fancy lighting and everything. But I need to shoot some reels. I want to do it with my phone. What are some recommendations? I think you mentioned to me ahead of time that you've got 4 different kind of key ideas that will enable photographers to shoot video content a little bit more effectively with their phones. And what are those ideas?
I'll start with first one. You see from a lot of photographers that transition, but they're a bit bigger on the YouTube scene. I wouldn't say as much on the social media, but they are promoting their photography instead of just like becoming videographers. So a lot of them, what they do is they have this POV view. And I used to watch a lot of like street photography in the past, because I love street photography. And I think the ability of like the amazing capabilities of the phones at the moment when it comes to video, it's just insane, especially from this new like iPhone series. So I would literally, for example, I was doing street photography or I was in a studio, I would probably get a phone clamp with a cold shoe and just put it on my camera. It cannot get any more POV than that, and then put it at the most ultra wide setting it has. That's one. I think second would be, if you have an iPhone shooting ProRes RAW, it's amazing. At least what you can get from the new ones. Third would be, use the Blackmagic app. We've spoken briefly about this before, but I fell in love with color grading first. When I first started video and stuff like that, I used to be a Premiere Pro user. That was many years ago.
Okay.
That was for events and stuff like that while I was still a photographer. And I was not the happiest with the software. Like, it would crash, it would do this, it would do that. Sometimes it would behave well for a very long time, and then sometimes it would just be, let's just say, very temperamental. And there was a period in my life where I started to watch like a lot more, basically a lot more cinema. I had a lot more cinema in my life, let's put it that way. And I was asked to assist, like, for example, in ads, like with Red Bull or Monster and stuff like that. So I would see the behind the scenes of all that, and I just got fascinated by it. And then I would see the end result. And a person I knew was like, oh, I used DaVinci Resolve. And I'm like, oh, what's that? And I started that, and I haven't stopped ever since. It's an amazing piece of software, and they have developed an app, a mobile app. I'm not sure if it's for Android, but I'm pretty sure it is on iPhones.
Okay.
You can literally shoot ProRes RAW, ProRes Log. Apple Log is amazing as well, and it's so good when you grade it. It doesn't break easily. It's really good in low light, considering it's a phone. And the thing is that it can help have a cohesive look on your video. So it's not like, oh, this was shot on the FX3 and the other thing is shot on the iPhone.
Right.
I can genuinely make it so that people are not able to tell them apart. So yeah, I think that piece of software is amazing. And when it comes to the phone, like shooting on your phone, I think it, the fourth and last one that goes for everything, not just for the phone or using your DSLR or mirrorless, it's be yourself. You don't want the clips to be too serious to work. You need to show who you are, because people do not just hire you for your work. They're hiring you for your persona as well, if that makes sense, like who you are. And that plays an important part, I think.
For sure.
When it comes to video.
For sure. I've been taking notes as you were talking here, so I just want to kind of go back to each point that you mentioned here with regards to using an iPhone more effectively to create these video reels. Number one, the POV or kind of first person view, and you talked about setting it up. I'm assuming here for reels, of course, we're shooting in vertical format, so we're just setting the camera up so it's facing us in a vertical format using some type of a tripod or a stand or a clip of some kind. That's what you're talking about?
Yeah, so you can have it, like if I was in a studio set, for example, and I wanted to like take BTS of like the actual like scene and all that stuff, I'd probably set it on a tripod and have it roll. If, for example, it's something that's a bit more lifestyle and you're like out on the street or anything like that, I would put it on the cold shoe mount of the camera, and you can decide whether you film yourself or whether you film your subject while you're shooting it. So right. I'll probably shoot the subject while I'm shooting it, because that's the center of it. That should be the center of attention. So yeah.
Yeah, I use a clamp. I've used different ones over the years, but you can just go on Amazon and find a spring-loaded clamp that will screw on to just a simple mount on like a Joby Gorillapod tripod of some kind.
And yeah, quarter thread.
Yeah. Just the basic quarter thread, and I'll mount that and shoot first person content that way. That works really well for me, because I usually shoot separately my DSLR versus my phone, so I can just easily set up the tripod and shoot that way. And of course, using that tripod, I can easily mount the phone wherever I want to. It's also very easy to do. Number two, you talked about shooting in ProRes RAW. I'm curious about this because, I mean, and you also mentioned later on shooting in that log format, which of course kind of takes any processing, internal processing away, and then gives you the ultimate control in color grading after the fact. Mm-hmm. But I also know that in 2023, people like to work quickly. So do you find that shooting in ProRes or even in a log format, that it enables, or I guess that it complicates or slows down the workflow very much in the process of post-production?
The first time.
Okay.
Like the first clip. Once you have graded, for example, a clip, it's fine. Correction before, it doesn't shoot, the iPhones don't shoot in RAW, but they shoot in ProRes, I think 422 and 444. I'm not sure about the 444.
Okay.
In Apple Log. So the important, like the key part here is the Apple Log. If anything, ProRes would be easier for most software to read anyway, because H.265 and H.264 is a bit too compressed. And it needs basically decompressing and then playback. So once you put a color grade on, it can be quite a choppy business. So you don't want that.
And that's the setting that they can just turn on in their camera settings and on the phone, correct?
Yeah, and that is why I suggested like using the Blackmagic app, because okay. It's very easy to change. If you don't want to grade, if you don't want to do anything like that, you can film in H.265 on non-log, basically, like normal. And, you know, you'll have your white balance properly exposed. You'll have everything properly exposed, and it will just work.
Cool. So it's I'm gonna fine. Yeah. I don't personally use the Blackmagic app. I want to download it now and experiment after this recommendation. And then the last thing that you said. So Blackmagic app was three, and then number four, be yourself. This is something easier said than done for a lot of people. I'm curious for yourself, Alex. Is there something that you do to kind of go into a recording mode? Like, I know I'm getting ready to shoot content, so I need to get in a certain mindset, or is that kind of defeating the whole purpose of being yourself? How do you perform well enough to be compelling while also maintaining that personality, your own personality?
First of all, I get out of my head that I am being recorded. I genuinely, well, in general terms, I don't like being in front of a camera, even though I'm in front of a camera now. What I would probably do is like, if for example I am doing a talking head or I'm like explaining something, I'd probably imagine that I'm speaking to someone and I'm explaining, or like I'm explaining to myself. I know it sounds a bit weird, but let's just think that I'm explaining to someone instead of just talking to a piece of glass, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And to be honest, sometimes like if I'm like in a shoot and stuff like that, and somebody else is like filming or anything like that, I'll be honest, I forget that BTS is shot, so I'm actually myself. So yeah, forget that you are being filmed. I think that's the main part. Like that is now your priority in a shooting scenario. Your priority is not to create BTS. Your priority is not to film how you work or explain stuff or do anything like that. Your priority is to deliver high-end assets to your clients and deliver it exactly as they want it to be. So I think the moment you start focusing on what you need to provide, the job that you are hired for, what you're there to do, why you were hired, so like the look, the editing style and all the stuff, your filming style and all that, once you have that, I don't think you have enough room in your brain to be conscious that you're being filmed as well, or that you're filming behind the scenes, if that makes sense. So as long as you like focus on what you were hired to do, I think you'll be fine.
Well, and just to create some distinction, you're talking about focusing on what they're being hired to do, but what we're really talking about here, at least the focus today, is on creating content for promotional purposes. So if the photographer is thinking about, or if they're creating a piece of content to promote their business on social or even to run an ad against, in order to be able to allow their personality to come across effectively, that's, they're trying to sell themselves as the photographer basically, then they need to kind of get out of their head and stop fixating the fact that they're recording content, and just as you were describing earlier, have a conversation. Imagine that they're having a conversation with the person on the other side, and just simply communicate with them the value proposition that they have to offer as a photographer.
Okay, so yeah, we're speaking for more like talking head kind of thing. Video and stuff like that. So yeah. So in that case, I would probably, that might sound a bit weird, but I would think like that I am talking to myself, as in like I have the consumer part of myself. That's the person that I am talking to. So how am I going to pitch? how can I get across the message that my content is the way I film, the way I photograph, it's what you need to benefit. So you, like, how will I give you value to your business? Whether, like, for example, it's a coaching business, whether it's a gym, whether it's a fitness brand, it's how can you pitch yourself to see, to show that, you know, you love doing what you do, you're passionate about what you do, and that you're willing to, like, you know, create some amazing stuff for your clients. And yeah, as you said before, it's easier said than done. I still find trouble doing talking heads. It takes me some time to warm up. So
I know that the promotional content is going to be a combination of, like you were talking about, that POV, and then also some either a combination of just audio overlay of the photographer talking, or in some cases, like we're talking about, kind of talking head, where there's some version of them talking to the camera. And I think that, you know, it's funny, as photographers, we still get nervous in front of the camera a lot of times if we're not used, especially in the context of being filmed for video, if we're not used to it. One of the things that's made a big difference for me, number one is being really intentional and bringing a higher level of energy than maybe I would normally in conversation. Because when somebody's watching a video of me, for any period of time, any more than 3 or 4 seconds, they're going to get bored if I'm not bringing a really great energy to bear. So I think about that, and I tend to kind of up the ante as far as energy as I'm communicating to the camera. And I don't think that takes away from my so-called personality. I'm thinking about the end user and not wanting to bore them. That's number one. The other thing that I've found has helped me, Alex, and maybe you can relate to this, is I'll actually rehearse what it is that I'm going to say in advance. It's one thing to know what it is that we sell, what the value proposition is, or even the general ideas that we want to communicate in the video. But if we haven't actually done any kind of rehearsal for those, then it's easy to stumble over our words. Maybe we use more words than we need to, and so it takes, you know, an extra 5-10 seconds when we didn't need to do that if we had just taken the time to rehearse it. And it ultimately comes out a lot more smoothly because we've taken the time to think about how we're presenting the ideas in a way that maybe is chronological, or at least logical in its order. It flows easily. Do you think about those kinds of things?
I usually just wing it.
Okay.
Very simply.
Okay.
I will have the general idea of what I want to talk in a talking head, and then I'm like, right, what do I want to say? It's this, this, and this, and then I just go at it. And it takes some time to, like, get it right. At the same time, you cannot have a full-on talking head for 15 seconds because people will get bored. So you will have a lot of B-roll.
Yeah.
And that is a perfect opportunity to, like, cut your ums and ems and wherever, you know, you feel weird, or maybe you pull a face. You can still keep the sound, keep, like, a sound overlay and stuff like that. But you can put B-roll on top of it, so people will not see what's actually happening, because it cannot I don't think it should be flawless, because it kind of like loses a bit of the human side to it.
Fair enough.
Like, if anything, you could get B-roll shots of, like, while you film or while you photograph and stuff like that. Go to 11 Labs, for example, write a script and have the AI say something for you, and then you can put that on top. But then again, that loses the personality. It can convince that it's not, it can convince that it's a person, but it's not really, if that makes sense. Not exactly. Like, you need to have, I believe error is a wonderful thing. Like, mistakes are wonderful, if that makes sense.
It does. Especially in this day and age where things are becoming more automated. I don't think the tech is quite good enough yet. I've seen different options, including, I think you said 11 Labs, is that right?
I said 11 Labs.
Yeah, I think I've looked at 11 before, and at least one or two other options, but the AI is not quite to a place. It's getting a lot better. I saw an option the other day that was incredible, but it's still at that place where, even if it's subconscious, we recognize that it's not a real human being that's speaking. And so you're absolutely right. There is that distinction that's still made. And of course, if we're promoting ourselves in our own personal business, it makes a lot more sense to use our own voice in that. But you make a great point. If I'm going to be mixing B-roll with my conversation or my narration or my audio, then that does give me some flexibility. I don't feel like I have to record the exact perfect video because I can clip it and then just lay B-roll on top of that. And that makes it a lot easier for sure.
Yeah, I believe that's a great tool. I mean, there are tools where you can, let's say, lend your voice. I don't remember from the top of my head. You can lend your voice to an AI, write a script, and it will speak it in your voice. That's why you see, like, it's when, I don't know if you've seen it, there was like a small period of time where there were like AI generated songs and people thought it was like actually from Drake or Kanye West, and they were not, because it was, you know, it was AI generated, and people were like, what?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was.
So, it's getting better and better for sure.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, 100%. But I think as you get more of those automations and all those technology advancements, people will actually roll back a bit and be like looking for the human side a bit more.
100%.
And I feel like it's happening like already. Things that are more genuine, have more mistakes, are a bit more human, they tend to like perform better on social media as well. Because like people want something to relate to, and they cannot relate to an AI, no matter how hard the machine tries to.
It's a good principle to keep in mind in general in business, that when an industry or culture in general moves in a particular direction, that immediately creates an opportunity for us to do something in contrast to it. And we saw this in the photography world. I mean, I started in photography back in 2001, so I've been in it for a while. And when the transition from film to digital happened, there was a time frame around 2005 where it started to become a little bit more mainstream. Digital did. And photographers were just, you know, kind of obsessed with it and all the post-production control that they had. And it was just this thing for a little bit. But it didn't take very long before it became trendy to be a quote-unquote film photographer, because that enabled photographers to stand out from the rest of the photographers who had gone digital. So there's always this opportunity to go back and do something that stands in contrast. And I think in particular, you're absolutely right. When it comes to digital technology, including AI and AI voices, making sure that we're continuing to leverage our actual personality, our individual personality, can play really well when it comes to promoting our business. I want to keep the conversation going though, and I know that some of what we've talked about may have overlapped with my next question, but we talked about how to be able to leverage a phone as a tool to shoot this content. Let's talk a little bit more specific, or I guess a little bit more generally, really, about ideas, principles that enable a photographer, especially one who is not as experienced as you, Alex, when it comes to shooting video, that will enable a photographer to create more powerful, more impactful reels for the sake of promoting their business. I think you mentioned to me ahead of time that you've got kind of seven big ideas here that you're going to share. So fire away. I'm going to take some notes.
Right. First 2-3 seconds. I think you've probably heard that a lot of times. Your hook is important because people are basically doom scrolling all the time and they just don't stop. So you need something engaging. It could be the way that you appear in the video. There is a guy on Instagram, I don't remember his name, it's something Shakur, I think Shakur O'Neill. He's a filmmaker and videographer, and he does this cool like intro where he like clicks his fingers and he like appears out of nowhere. So it's something that will grab their attention the first 3 seconds, and they will be like, oh, wait a minute. So they will not scroll past.
Yeah.
Your first job is to not let them scroll past. That is your first job. Once you do that, all the rest can follow. Second would probably be, people need to show, I know a lot of people say about like niching down. So like picking like a specific niche and, you know, and all that stuff. But I think it's good to showcase like diverse work, that you can do more than one thing. Because people can, like, for example, yes, I am in the fitness industry and stuff like that. And yes, I do like athlete highlights and, you know, all that stuff. But I'm also very good at product, and I can do other stuff besides like fitness events. So it can be product, but it can be also like little shorts that are a bit more cinematic, which I actually really, really, really enjoy doing. Those are my favorite thing. I wish I had more time to do them, but you never know. Like, people need to show that basically they are more diverse, and they can, like, that there is variety to the style that you can shoot. Because I know people that do fitness, but they're very good at wedding, for example, as well, like wedding-related stuff, photography or video. There are people that are very like product-based, and they're very good at product, but they can be an amazing drone operator as well. So, you know, just show that you're good in more than one thing. You might be really good at editing, not just filming. So take two or three things and have them be your niche rather than having one specific thing. For example, you'll have people that exclusively shoot like American football matches or tennis games or I don't know, NASCAR or Formula One. I think it's good to show that you can do more than one thing.
And just to be clear, because you're right, we certainly talk a lot about the idea of niching down and specializing here on the podcast. What are you suggesting is the benefit of diversifying the portfolio that you're sharing? Is it just to maximize opportunity, or is there some other idea there?
I think it's to, I would say more it's to maximize the spectrum of what your brain can actually do. You get exposed to very different things, and I think it's a good thing. You operate differently, like for example at a sports event, but you also operate differently when you do like a product related shoot, or if it's a high-end commercial, or if it's a wedding, or if it's something that's related to traveling. So it's good for you as well, because you learn a lot more at the same time, and it helps you. Like if your favorite thing to do is to do like sports events, all those other things that you will try to diversify your portfolio and broaden, let's say, your horizons, they will slowly trickle down towards the thing that you really, really like. In this case, for example, fitness events. So nothing goes to waste.
And I see your point about kind of creating more opportunity for ourselves, challenging us, and the diversity, the significance of diversity there. The reason, at least the significance that I see in specialization, is that you know, if you want to make your marketing, your job as a marketer, easier, I think in many ways, if I'm trying to sell five different types of photography versus one, it's a lot harder for somebody that sees five different types of photography for me to kind of categorize me as the photographer in their brain, because they don't know what it is that I specialize in. So now they've got to associate five different types of photography versus just the one. So do you think it creates any confusion in the mind of the potential client that they're seeing all these different styles?
It depends how much you will show of those different styles. So like, for example, yes, I will do like other stuff besides fitness, but I don't like really, really like showcase them. There might be like a little glimpse of something, but I will not like, at least on social media, it will not be my main focus per se. It's going to be more like additional. So it's going to be like 10% of the content. But yeah, I know what you mean. And I agree, like, yes, have your niche. But I would keep my niche as in like, well, at least in my case, it can be a bit more general. So because when it comes to fitness, for example, it can be a lot of things. It can be fitness products. It can be events. It can be athletes. It can be like a lot of things. So that's the good thing about it. People know that that I deal with that. So it's not too niche down, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, cool. So number one was to make sure that you've got a powerful hook the first 2 to 3 seconds of the video to capture that person's attention so they actually stay to watch the video. Number two, showcase diverse work. What's number three?
Number three for me is to, I mean, you've probably heard this as well. Don't gatekeep. There are other creators as well. And I personally, if I find something that's very interesting, I like to show it, like whether it's an editing trick, whether it's a way to do something in a more like easy way that will assist your workflow. And at the same time, you can highlight your like technical skills, and that's something that, you know, clients would want to look. Because many people say, oh, you just press the record button. Oh, like, you know, the typical, oh, those images, those pictures are amazing. What camera do you use? People don't realize that's actually a bit offensive. Like, the camera doesn't matter. I can shoot on a potato and I can still get the same thing if I want to. The camera just makes it more convenient. It's easier as a workflow. You know, like, you'll get better workflow, get better dynamic range. You'll get files that are better from the get-go, so you will not have to work as hard on them. But yeah, like...
So just to be clear, when you say don't gatekeep, you're talking about don't gatekeep more specifically elements of your workflow. You can actually include some of that in the content that you're creating as a way to, I don't know, add value, to share ideas, or even just basically give them BTS?
You give them BTS. You also kind of like show that you know what you're doing, so it's a bit more like you become more of an authority on the topic. Yeah. So you show them that this is why I'm a good photographer, is because I know my stuff. I'm not just a random person that walks around with a camera. It just takes, you know, a few clicks and be like, oh, I'm a photographer now. No, it's not like that. I'm here to provide value, and I'm going to show you why and how. And it's more on a, this is more like tutorial based, if that makes sense. But you impress clients with that thing.
Yeah.
But by doing that, but you also get a lot of support from fellow photographers and videographers, because you might show them something that they didn't know how to do. And, you know, that brings more engagement in, that brings a bit more traffic in, and all that at the end of the day helps. And it's a good thing to show that you know what you're talking about and you know how to do your job properly.
That's fair enough. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because even for myself, if I was running a photography business right now, I wouldn't necessarily think to create a content strategy that included showing me working behind the scenes and one element of my business or the other. But including that kind of personalizes it, but then it also, as you said, demonstrates expertise, which is an important component here. So, all right. So number three, don't gatekeep, and more specifically, don't gatekeep your workflow or the BTS of running your business. What's number four?
Number four, I think it would be consistency. And when I say consistency, I mean consistency in terms of the style of how your images look, how your videos look. So you want people to see something, and when they scroll past, they know Alex did that.
Yeah.
Or they know Nathan did that. Yeah. There is a signature, and being unique in a sea of creators is a big thing. I mean, we are all unique. You can take 10 photographers, ask them to photograph a building. All 10 pictures, I can guarantee you 110% they will be different, because everyone has a different style. But I think people need to show it off more, I guess. Like, show off your style a bit more, rather than, you know, falling into what other content creators do.
Yeah.
If you think that, oh, but you know, when I do it like this, it looks stupid, or I don't know, like, oh, I don't think I'm as good as other people and all that stuff. It doesn't matter. As I said, faults are the best thing. Like, mistakes and faults are the best thing. You want that. And
well, and sometimes you got to take a risk too. I mean, if you're going to stand out, you've got to be willing to take a risk, and you can always course correct later, but you got to take that risk to stand out.
And let's be honest, at the end of the day, social media is like so like massive, as in terms of like how many users and all that stuff. It's a lot of people. It's billions of people on social media. So you're one person. If you mess up, it doesn't doesn't matter. People are not going to remember next day.
Yeah.
It's not like, I don't know, you're the president of the United States and you do something wrong. People will know. But you're...
The funny thing is people even forget about that stuff too. I mean, the world just moves so quickly, and even social media in particular is transient. There are a lot of people on there, and it's transient too. I mean, we're just... material is constantly refreshing and updating. So you're absolutely right. If we don't get it 100% right the first time, it's not the end of the world. We keep going. But I think you're right. Looking for an opportunity to stand out with a particular style, but more specifically then presenting that style consistently, both certainly with the photography, because we're talking about photographers here, but even in the style of edit for the video content being created, that really does help kind of solidify the brand position in the mind of that potential client.
Yeah, 100%.
Cool. 100%. All right, take us to number five.
BTS, big and important one. I think people like to see what's going on behind, as in like how things are made, how things are created, how things are conceptualized, and just people. I think people just enjoy how pictures are taken or how pieces of content are created. And again, it ties up with a previous point a bit. You can make it unique, like, you know, correspond to you, and you can show off how you do stuff in your own specific way, in your, like, I believe it's a very important factor to show you yourself at work, like, while you do what you love, instead of, you know, just showing the end result.
Yeah. Okay, very good. So number five, make sure that we're consistently using BTS behind the scenes content footage as part of that video or those videos, the reels that we're putting out. And I put in parentheses as I was taking notes, the creation process specifically. And I think that's good. We kind of got obsessed in the photography industry for a while about telling our own personal stories, kind of putting ourselves out there personally, and including some of that is good too. But I think it would be very interesting to include the creation process, especially if you can present it in a creative manner, to share some of that behind the scenes of the creation or the creative process with potential clients. Again, it establishes us as the authority, the expert, and kind of gives them a little bit of a peek and insight into what that process looks like. So that's good. Okay, let's go to number six. We got a couple left.
Yeah, number six, I would, as a photographer, I mean, you do it as a filmmaker or videographer as well, before and after. Like, for example, I will show off my grades. I'll make videos of, like, you know, from S-Log 3 or from ProRes RAW to the final product. And it's interesting to see how photographers get a raw image and what they come up with as the end product. And I those are like also very simple to do, because it's literally a slide across and that's it. And they help, like, there are accounts literally that you'll see like 5 out of 7 posts in a week. They are literally a slide, the before and after. And I like that as well. Because it makes you think, like, personally, as a photographer or a videographer, like, I'm like, oh, what would I do different? But at the same time, the more intense the change is, I think it's more like people are like, wow. Like, I've seen some images go from meh to be like, I want that printed and on my wall.
Right.
Kind of thing.
So the benefit here is the impact that we're able to communicate, or what do you see as the primary benefit to the before afters and as part of our content strategy?
It's the impact, and also, as I said before, like, you know, you're in a more subtle way, you're showcasing your, like, technical expertise. You don't really, like, tell them, yeah, oh, you know, this and that, and this is how I grade, and this is how I do this and that. But the before and after is like, this is the beginning, this is the end result, and, you know, people are like, oh, wow, like, that was quite good, so how was it done? And you actually might get further interaction from that of, like, did you use a preset pack, or, I mean, I hope people don't ask those stuff, but did you use a preset pack, or did you use a LUT, for example? I've had that question many times, and people are bamboozled when I tell them I don't use LUTs, because I grade everything from start to finish. But it can also motivate people to actually like start experimenting, like younger photographers and stuff like that, start experimenting a bit more with editing and stuff like that.
So again, I think we need to distinguish, though, the content. What we're primarily talking about today is creating content for the purpose of marketing our business. But we also know that other videographers and photographers are going to see our content as well. They're going to also be curious about the process. When it comes to clients, you made an interesting point earlier, which is we don't need to go into the like nitty-gritty technical details because the clients don't care. They just want that impact that you were talking about, the before. Oh my goodness, wow, look at his editing capability. Look what he can make happen. I don't have to worry about my pictures. I know they're going to turn out good if he can do that. You know, that kind of internal conversation that might be generated as a result of that content. The flip side of it, though, is like you were talking about, some photographers, videographers might actually be curious about the BTS because they want to know how to go do that in with their work as well.
Yeah, and the thing is that when you have that kind of, like, for example, video, and a client sees it, it's a bit more, I wouldn't say like you're selling your technical expertise, but it's in a more like subtle way. Like, you don't bore them with the stuff, because as you said, you don't need to tell them, you know, I play with the curves and I do this with across the blacks a bit. They don't care. At the end of at the end of the day, yeah, your customers do not care at all how you're doing something. That kind of like is true, but it's not true, because if I show up with just my camera body and my lens, they will look at me weird. But when I show up with the full cinema rig, they look at me in a very different way, because I look apparently more professional, even though it doesn't matter. I don't know if you've seen the jokes and the memes about matte boxes in front of lenses and stuff like that. You literally buy the matte box to impress your clients, not to actually use it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Because I think the memes were about like people using matte boxes inside like studio environments where it's a more controlled area. Like, you control the light anyway. It's like, why would you need a matte box? But they're like, oh, we do charge a bit more.
Yeah, perception is a funny conversation. And I've been in the industry long enough to see those conversations play out in different ways. But I think why in particular this part of the conversation is important, we talk about not needing to go into technical details. Photographers have a tendency, I think maybe it's dying down a little bit, but on their websites for their business, they'll talk a lot about themselves, and then they'll talk about the kind of the process of getting into photography and why they're passionate about photography and what part of photography they like. And there's a lot of this stuff that may matter to them as the photographer. Their story may matter to them, but at the end of the day, that only plays so large a role for the sake of the client, who just simply wants to hire a great photographer. Yeah, they want to connect with you at some point, but the main thing is they need to know that you've got a value proposition that is compelling to them. And in this case, it may be wedding photography or portrait photography. And to share that particular value proposition simply and clearly, and maybe what the differentiating factor is between your photography and somebody else's, even better, that's where the focus should be. We don't need to go into the technical details behind it immediately, maybe later on, but not immediately. The biggest thing is a clear, simple value prop. And in this case, if we're going to give them some BTS, it doesn't have to be super technical. We can just demo our ability in a way that's impactful, grabs their attention, and then maybe draws them in a little bit more.
Exactly. Yeah. I think you put it better than I tried to put it, but
No. This is a conversation. We're going back and forth. So we had number one was the hook is important, first 2 to 3 seconds. And I think that's really important to remember. Even as you were talking about that, Alex, I was thinking about an ad that we're running currently, actually, for one of my businesses, and what that opening 2 to 3 seconds looks like, and is it compelling enough, and how could I do better? So I think it's a good reminder for everybody creating content, video content. Number two, showcase diverse work. Three, don't gatekeep the process, really. Number four, consistency of the style in the presentation. Number five, make sure to use BTS, particularly of the creation process. Number six, utilize before afters for impact, for getting people's attention. And then we're here to number seven. What's your kind of last big idea?
I would put, make sure that your stuff is high quality and optimized. Oh, great. It forgot to focus today. That make sure the videos that you put out are high quality. So like basically think of it like optimized for online viewing, if that makes sense. So like it's vertical, it's sharp, it's, you know, it's engaging in the start. It's not like too long, and it provides some value. That's the main thing. So it's more like a, I would say like, it's more like a generalization of everything that we pointed out before.
Sure.
But the main key is that it needs to be like high quality. It needs to be like good footage. I think obviously nobody wants to look at pixelated videos. But besides that, it really needs to be engaging. And that ties back to the first saying, you know, the first 3 seconds matter. If anything, I would say every 3 seconds matter, if that makes sense. As in, like, you need to I wouldn't say re-engagement, but because of how people scroll, even if after six, there isn't something to, like, get their attention, they will scroll away still. You want them to watch it till the end.
Yeah.
So every now and again, you need something. And I personally, like, I didn't used to use my phone. I used to have an iPhone 12 mini, which the camera was not up to par, per se. Yeah. But I use my phone, now that I got a 15 Pro Max, I use my phone a lot more. And I include a lot more from my phone into my, like, reels than I used to. I would avoid my phone in the past. I was like, if I don't show my camera, it's not worthy of going on a reel. And I think that's another thing. People need to be a bit less picky of how they're going to present something. I think what matters is if it's got value, if it's engaging and it's decent quality, people will watch it.
Yeah, because when you said quality, I think maybe initially the conversation was leaning toward the quality of or it sounded like the conversation was leaning toward the quality of the video itself. But I think about TikTok and how terrible some of these videos are, so-called quote unquote quality wise, like the actual quality of the video footage itself, how terrible it is. And they're getting hundreds of thousands or millions of views. So it's a funny world that we live in right now. And it's an interesting and compelling conversation for another day, because it's a loaded topic. But you know, if we get too caught up in the idea of having a perfect video from a rendering standpoint, or making sure that the text is aligned just so, or that the music is timed just perfectly with each of the, it's very easy to get caught up in all those details. And at the end of the day, there's endless evidence of the fact that it's not perfection that always converts to a video that people like. So what you were then highlighting, Alex, which is that thinking about the length, keeping it short because of people's attention spans, making sure that it's compelling and engaging, that it does speak to a value proposition, that it's even fitting to the platform as well, that we're thinking about, we're not just blindly just kind of pasting it to every platform and making sure that we're actually creating content that is fitting for the platform that we're posting to. I think all of those ultimately make for the so-called high quality video. Am I following that correctly?
Yeah. 100%. You can have the cleanest video you want. It's not bad to have good quality video, because nobody, as I said before, wants to just like look at big pixels on the screen. But at the same time, you'd rather post a video than to spend too much time dwelling on it and not do it. As I said before, like, I love a mistake and I love a fault. Because I think that's what makes us human, and social media is getting more and more of the human element back slowly, but, you know, it's getting it back, and I think that's a good thing. So I think people just need to embrace. Plus, if you do a mistake, you're probably not going to do it afterwards, so you're going to learn something at the end of the day. Like it happened to me, like when I first got the Pro Max, I messed up a setting, and I think I underexposed when I did Apple Log, and I couldn't save that, you know, that video. But, you know, it was a lesson of careful. You don't underexpose with a Sony. What would you underexpose with a phone? So, you know,
live and learn, though, right?
Course, correct. Yeah.
Make adjustments. Keep going. Yeah. Yeah. Perfection. What's the phrase or the saying? Perfection is the enemy of completion or accomplishment. Something to that effect. But basically, if we get so obsessed, and I'm guilty of it certainly in the past, if we get so obsessed with things being just so, then it gets in the way of just getting the thing done. Sometimes we just need to get the thing done. And the more that we do that consistently, of course, then we develop experience through the process, and it becomes easier, and the product gets better over time. We just need to give ourselves that. Understand that it's a process. Go ahead and put the first piece of content out there. It may not be exactly perfect, but you'll learn. You'll get better as long as you keep an open mind and you're looking for opportunities to improve. And the internet will be plenty forgiving in the process.
Yeah, it will be. 100% it will be. I agree. Just do the trip. Have that journey. That's the most important part.
It's a good summation of our conversation today, Alex, and I appreciate you making time to come and do the show. For everybody listening in, I want you to make sure, and I'm going to post this up on screen here really quick, make sure that you go to chromaodyssey.com, and then it's chroma_odyssey_films on Instagram. We'll link to both of those in the show notes at bokapodcast.com, and when we get those all published here in the next 24 hours, so you can look for that, bokapodcast.com. We'll have those links in the show notes there. Thanks, Alex. Once again, I really appreciate you sharing with all of our audience today.
No problem. Anytime.